Well, I think if we're honest, we all in some ways are unwell. Maybe not in big ways or little ways. I'm like, oh man, I lost my temper again. I thought I was gonna be better at that. Oh man, I can't believe how defensive I got when that conversation occurred. Oh wow, I told myself I wouldn't get sucked into that triangle again between mom and the kids, even though I'm older, my brother has a tendency to da-da-da. Ah, what is wrong with me that I keep getting sucked into this thing? That's what we're going to look at in our series, Real Thinking. We're going to look at different ways we process and think and align our thoughts. And the premise I'm going to try and share, and this will be a very practical series, is that we don't react to people and circumstances. Come on, Chad, that's all we do is react to people and circumstances. We actually react to what we think about people and circumstances. And so there is a way to change the way you think so that your reactions are not tied to what other people do, especially things that are out of your control. And with that, we're going to look at two ways we can think and process life. The jester chair, with certain ways the jester, the Bible calls us foolish type thinking, inexperienced thinking, ingrained patterns, the jester thoughts, the jester reels, or the sage, the king, the wise thoughts. How can we, without our circumstances even changing, change the way we think about those things? So with that today, I got to tell you, I have a tendency to not even know that the jester ends up being the way I process stuff. But what if in the next 30 days together, we try and let the sage and not the jester load our reel? And do that, I'm going to use an illustration over and over again to kind of see how this works. And we're going to use the idea of a video projector. For many of us, life is determined by actions and reactions. I got happy because somebody flipped the switch and good things happened. I got a raise. Things were bad because my kids were misbehaving. They flipped the switch. I've had a bad day because that's kind of annoying. Well, if my reactions, what comes out and is projected out of my life, is always determined by the actions of people and circumstances, then who's got all the control over how I react? The people and circumstances. What's the hardest thing to control in life? People and circumstances. But what if, regardless of what flips my switch, what if it engages a reel which determines how I feel, and that actually turns into my reaction? And what if every time that action occurs, I have a choice between which reel I will play, the jester reel and the sage reel? Haven't you noticed that two people can encounter the exact same circumstance? One's anxious and one's calm. One's self-controlled and one blows their top. So it can't just be the action. There has to be something else going on that allows different people to respond at different times. And haven't you seen that in your own life? You've encountered the same thing you encountered 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 20 years ago, and you're handling it differently now, right? Same action, different reaction. Because the wisdom of time lets you process that differently. About a month ago, my wife and I had the chance to go to Disney for the first time with our granddaughter. And my daughter, Sierra, is always doing research, just constantly doing research. She's such a great mom. And she found that for many families, when they go to Disney, the worst thing that can happen is it rains. Because, oh my goodness, it's ruined the whole day. It's ruined the experience. I can't believe it rained on our way to Disney. Yet when they interviewed kids, they found that kids on the same day that it rained had the best time of their lives. So it wasn't expected to rain. However, Sierra thought, just in case it does, like with Florida, there's always a chance, she brought this little outfit for her to wear. And notice what happens. All the other families are gathered around and hiding out. And notice how, same circumstances, the reaction of joy versus sorrow in this little clip. Let's watch.
Quack, 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 quack.
Randy goes, you can always get wetter. I'm like, I don't know.
We're thinking, we can't get on the Jungle Cruise yet. We can't get into Small World yet. She's thinking, a puddle to jump into. This is awesome, right? Same circumstance, totally different reaction, by how we think about it and experience it. So we're going to work through a book of the Bible called the Book of Proverbs. And it is a book of wisdom, ancient wisdom that has helped people with their actions and reactions for literally centuries. And today I want to give you three reels that the sage can load up for us on how we process life in different ways. The first reel is, will I build up or will I tear down? Maybe a challenge has come into your life, something beyond what you've been able to handle before. Are you going to say to yourself, boy, how can I let this challenge, this circumstance build me up? Or am I going to let it tear me down? In this circumstance with my team, with my family, how do I, even in this tense pressure cooker we're in, build people up on my team and in the circumstance? Or how do I unconsciously, am I tearing them down in ways I don't realize? Here's what it says in Proverbs chapter 14. This is a little book in the middle of the Bible. It's filled with these little idioms for wisdom. It says, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. So we see these constant ideas. The jester, the foolish person, tears down their life with their own hands. Why would you do that? Well, it's because of the way you're processing things. The wise person comes to every circumstance and says, how do I use this to build up my house? How do I use these challenges, these circumstances, to build a better life because of it? Then, as these pieces of poetry do, the next piece then rhymes with or validates or explains the previous one. He who walks in uprightness, so if you want to be a wise person that builds your house, a little detail here, you would walk in uprightness. What does that mean? Well, the word uprightness means you're aligning your thinking, aligning your reactions, aligning how you're processing it to some kind of straight line. Do you have some kind of straight line you're using to align how you're reacting, how you're thinking about this? That's what wise people do. They know how to align their thinking and their reacting to something. What do? They fear the Lord. They have an awe, a sense of wonder that, oh my goodness, I want to handle things the way God might handle things. In contrast, the foolish person tears things down because he is perverse in his ways. And the word perverse means to twist off course. Instead of being aligned to something, you've bent something. Your own ego, your own deflection, your own excuses. You know, we all do it. We pervert or we bend or twist something to our own reality. We despise the line. And he is the source of the line. So let me give you that kind of in real time. So if you're playing with these two reels that we talked about, here's an example of a foolish reel and a wise reel in processing something that might happen in your life. Let's just say you blow up at your kids. Your wife says, hey, I'm not sure you should handle that quite right. Or maybe at work, you kind of say something a little sharper than you meant to, and a colleague brings it up. When they bring it up to you, you deflect it. You think to yourself, hey, it wasn't really that bad. I was just venting. I actually think it was kind of bad. No, they're just being too sensitive. Okay? Well, the reason I reacted this way is because they started it. I'm always amazed at the inner kindergartner that still lives in me and blames people for how I react. God knows I had to. I had to tell the kids. I mean, if they don't get this kind of discipline in their life, what's ever going to happen? Or we do see some of the consequences of our actions. We say, I'll just fix it later. I'll fix it later. And we never get to later. Or we talk ourselves into all kinds of bad decisions because I think, well, I deserve this. I'm not getting the encouragement, the affection I need from my spouse. I kind of deserve this for all the hard work I do. And we fudge lines because of that foolish jester thinking. With the same circumstance, maybe a kid's reacting badly, even talking in an inappropriate way. But you don't start with that. You start with, can I become better in this, in the way I handle this as a parent? There could be a short-term compromise, but how could I, in this moment, at this time, practice long-term habits? How do I build myself and our family up through this? What's the wise thing to do in this moment? Or maybe you want to align yourself to someone. I want to respond to this like. And maybe you recognize somebody in your life that when they encounter circumstances or conflict, man, they handle it so skillfully. You think, how could I do this like that person? Maybe it's a small group leader you've met here at the church. Maybe it's someone who is a coach. Maybe it's your father or grandfather. Maybe it's your mom. But you start saying, she handled it. He handled it so well. Built herself up despite the circumstances. I have a buddy like that. His name is Rich. Every time I call Rich, he's such an encouragement. Every single conversation I've ever had with him, 30 plus years, he always takes a moment to just affirm me,
build me up, tell about some amazing things God's doing in his life. But then he just reaffirms, Chad, I love your heart. I love your skill. God is using you. I always feel built up when I'm around Rich. And so when I'm in circumstance, I often think to myself, how can I build people up the way Rich builds people up when he talks to them? What is wisdom anyway? I've got a couple friends here at Horizon who have definitions of wisdom I think about a lot. My friend John Kirby says it this way. He says, wisdom is pain remembered. That's good, isn't it? I have another friend. He says, my scars itch when it comes to circumstance. I don't want to make that same mistake again. Wisdom is really the skill of applying knowledge to life. It's not knowledge, it's the skill of applying the right piece of knowledge and wisdom to the right situation in life. So here's my encouragement for the next 30 days. There's a book of the Bible. It's right about in the middle. If you flip open to the middle of the Bible, it's called Proverbs. There are 31 different chapters. And a habit I've had since I was 16 is I try and, I don't do it every week, a couple times a week, pick what day of the week we're on. Yeah, like November has 31 days. July, I might say today's the 12th. So when I get up today, before I go to bed today, I might read Proverbs chapter 12. It's just a whole series of 10 to 14 different pieces of wisdom applies to that day. And just try that for the next month. Whatever day of the week it is, flip open the middle of your Bible to Proverbs. We'd love to give you a Bible if you want. And as you do that, just read that and see this ancient wisdom that's helped shape the thinking of generations of people around the world. Secondly, instead of just thinking, how do I build up versus tear down? What about my words, how I use my words, how I think about my words? Are my words a whip I use, or are they a hedge? To whip people into shape, to let people know that was inappropriate. Not to say there isn't a time for that, but in general, are you using your words as a whip or a hedge to protect yourself, protect your future, protect your family, protect your teams? Is my mouth a whip, or is it a hedge? As we continue on in this book of Proverbs, chapter 14, here's the next one it says, in the mouth of a fool, in the mouth of the jester, is a rod of pride. So a rod in those days would be like a branch used for whipping the donkey. Whip, 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 whip. A fool keeps saying stupid things. Now, you know this, right? Because you've been to a family reunion before. Right? And they don't come with labels. I'm a fool. But they sound like it, don't they? You can immediately pick it out. The person's been gossiping the same way they've always gossiped. They've been bemeaning people the whole time. They're victims all the time. And it's like a whip. It's been whipping them. And they're like, you know, things aren't real successful at work. I lost another job. And you're like, oh, really? I know why, right? Their mouth has been whipping them their whole life, and they don't even know it. Unless we get self-righteous, when I see that in other people, I go, oh, my goodness, these are smart people. And they don't realize they're doing it to themselves. Oh, I bet you I got blind spots. They did research years ago and found that an average person in America has 3 to 4 blind spots. Not weak spots you know about, you're working on, things you're completely oblivious to. Oh my goodness. Might the way I talk to my spouse, even though I've been doing it for 20 years, be something I need to work on? But acknowledging that means I've been making a mistake for 20 years. Yeah, I might. The way I handle my anger, the way I use sarcasm. But I don't want to think about my mouth like the jester does. It's just it's a whip of pride. And look at that issue. What's the biggest problem driving that decision? Ego and pride. I made it all about me. I'm only looking at me. It was hilarious. Look what I got out of it. Instead, the lips of the wise, the sage wisdom, will preserve them. And the word preserve there is like a thorny barrier. In ancient cultures, if you had, you know, chickens or horses or whatever you had to keep them from running off at night. So you would take thorns and you would make a fence around at night. I got to see these when I was in Africa a couple years ago. And you'd keep your animals in with this thorny hedge. What about before I speak, before I lose my temper, I think to myself, how do I make sure my words here hedge me? I don't want to regret what I'm going to say tomorrow or next week. How do I also help this hedge, despite how they reacted or how inappropriate they said it, how can I speak in a way that helps grow them, helps meet the needs of the person I'm talking to, build up the entire team? I want my words to be a hedge, not a whip. So let me give you two examples of how that might play out in that reel. So action. Somebody blows their top, somebody does something dumb, and you think to yourself, they made me mad. You know what? Somebody gives an idea. You don't really even hear them out because I know better than this. A kid says something inappropriate because they're really processing fear or anger, but all you hear is they're respecting me. Don't disrespect me. And they need to not disrespect you, but what if we started by listening and finding out why they're acting the way they're acting? I got to control the narrative here. I got to uphold standards. I can't put up with this. How dare they? And this is, I got to tell you, one of mine. I'm so quick to react, to prejudge, because I just think, how dare they say, how dare they think, how dare they not appreciate what I've done? And that affects how I'm going to feel and how I'm going to process it. So what comes out of me? Out of you, maybe. Anger, demeaning words, disrespectful words, or just strong words. But what if we switch reels? Same reel, we're going to come to that. Now we say, listen first to make sure I understand what's going on and where they're coming from. I want to understand before I react. Understand. I'm already reacting. No, understand before I react. I want to look for my blind spots in the situation, not just see where they're wrong. How do I pull people together in how I use my words here? How do I use how I handle this to protect my own moral future, to protect the family, and protect their hearts as I go through this? Wouldn't that change how we spoke if we even had one of those thoughts go through our head? We were open to feedback because pride hadn't blinded us to hearing feedback. I love playing sand volleyball. I play every week. I've been playing since I was in high school, really. So I played in Chicago and Atlanta and here in Cincinnati. And I met this business guy, very, very successful business guy. And I told him I played volleyball. He goes, I love volleyball. I'd love to play with you. I said, well, playing a pretty competitive team. He goes, that's right. I'm a very competitive player. I said, well, it's okay, because I can play either way. If you want to sign up for a team, just kind of, you know, A leagues and B leagues and double B leagues and C leagues. So I can play whichever, but we want to really get in the league. We'll be kind of at our level. He goes, trust me, I'm fine. I'm a competitive player. I said, all right, so you want to go into like a high B level? Yes. This is highly competitive volleyball. Yeah. So we get out to the first game, and me and my three buddies who play all the time, this new guy, and as we start playing, it becomes obvious at about the second play that he has never played competitive volleyball. I mean, I bet you when he's doing the sports after the picnic at the company volleyball, he's probably amazing. I would call him a decent, below average recreational player. But oh my goodness. He was immediately embarrassed because the play showed it all. He didn't know that he wasn't a great player. Well, it turns out he's also a public communicator, and so we started talking. And as we were talking, I asked him to come speak at an event that I was doing. We're going to kind of speak together. And I said, hey, are you open to feedback? He goes, oh, I speak all the time. I said, well, I speak all the time, but I have people critique me every week, and I watch my own videos, and I have people come in and look at what I do. He's like, no, I don't need any help. I'd say the same thing. He probably is very successful presenting, reading his deck off the screen. He's probably really good at you know, going through an Excel file on a page, but it wasn't great communication. It was just below average. And it was just because of that pride. He didn't know what he didn't know. He wasn't open to the feedback. I went boating a few weeks ago with a buddy of mine, and he's built and sold multiple businesses, multi-million dollar businesses. And he said, you know, Chad, the greatest disappointment in my life is I can connect with anybody, but I don't know how to connect with my 20-year-old son. He said, do you have any advice? And we just had this great conversation while we were boating for a couple hours together. I said, have you been open to apologize? He said, what do you mean? I don't know what I've done wrong. I said, what if you just sat down with your son and said, listen, I've been busy building a lot of important things in business over life, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but I don't feel like I did a great job of getting to know you, and I can't make up for lost time, but I really would like to make the next 10 years different from the last 10 years, and if you'd help me, I'm sorry that I didn't know how to do this well, but I want to get better at this, and it's going to be a little awkward. He's like, let me get a tape recorder out. He starts recording my little talk. He's like, I got to try that, and I followed up with him the last couple weeks, and he's like, I'm going to do that. I want to set a new pattern for how I use my words. And I want to try and set a new pattern for how I connect with my older son. It's important But in our words, we can't let our pride say, yeah, I'm not open to feedback. I get enough feedback at work. I don't need feedback in my marriage. Well, you need feedback. And if you're at the top of your game, you need feedback to get another step up. I don't know about you, but I want to be at the top of my game next week, next month, next year. Even tonight, I'm doing something I do every 18 months to 2 years. I'm doing a one-man drama where I do the entire book of a Bible in character. And in doing that, I've been practicing for the last month, getting it ready, getting it prepared, going over the lights and all that, because I play all the different parts. And so I have a friend at our church who's a professional actress, and she's a director. So I brought her in. What thoughts do you have? I've done probably 30 of these, but I want other people's feedback. How are the words coming across? Are people hearing it the way I'm intending it? And you may not be into this. It's going to be deep Bible stuff, and it's at some praise and worship like our equipping service, so it may not be your thing. But it's a chance as an actor, you know, you need a director. You need outside influence to help shape you and direct you and how you're thinking and how you're reacting. We need that in our lives. We need that in our marriages. We need that in our parenting. Are my words a whip and I don't even realize it? Or are they a hedge that people feel affirmed and encouraged, protected by my leadership? Lastly, the last reel I want to think about today is a really interesting one that comes out of this passage, the next verse, and it talks about, would you rather have a messy farm or a clean barn? I bet you if we raise the hand, most of us say, a clean barn. I like a clean house. Who doesn't like a clean house? I like a clean house. I like things organized. This is not going to make you feel bad about wanting things to be clean. However, if you're a farmer, you can have a clean barn, but you can't have a clean barn and a productive farm. Right? A productive farm is going to require some manure. If you got animals, it's going to have some dirt. Right? If you're going to be getting corn, you're going to have fertilizer over here for the, you're going to have the machinery over here and gas over here. You have the smell of stuff. Often in life, we try and have a productive farm, which is messy. By its own definition, it's messy. While at the same time, we're frustrated that we don't have a clean barn all the time. What if we began to understand that having and doing anything worthwhile, anything productive, anything that matters, if you want to have a real relationship with anybody, it's going to be messy, right? Because you're messy and I'm messy. I say things I don't mean to say. I stumble and do the wrong thing at times. People need the freedom to be messy to be in a real relationship. Here's how Proverbs says it. It's a very interesting little proverb. Where no oxen are, the trough is clean. You want the manger, the trough in your barn to be clean? Perfect. Don't have any animals. Don't feed the pigs. Don't feed the oxen. You want to have a clean barn? Don't have any animals in your farm. But with much increase, and in that agricultural community, if you want to be toiling through your land to break up the rocks, you'd have to have oxen, which are pulling and toiling and tilling up the soil, right? If you want to have a great increase, which means you got to have oxen, they're pulling these big tills through the dirt so that you have seed, so that you have water, so you can weed it. Much increase in your farm is going to come with the strength of an ox. You need ox in your life. However, if you're going to have ox in your life, you're not going to have a clean trough. And how many of us have enough space in our life, not to just appear perfect and appear good, we're all about the reputation of a clean barn, and we haven't created enough space for ourselves or space for our family to be messy, to have a bad day, to not react the way you should? Is there space in your life to rest when things are messy? To still function when things aren't all in their same place. To be okay if things aren't coming across the best, even though you still appreciate a good reputation. In fact, the word here for trough is the word for manger. So, of course, you probably recognize manger as Jesus was born in a manger. He's born in a trough, the place where you fed animals. And even the message of the Bible is God did not wait for us to get our act together. Most religions are that way. Get your act together, you do the right thing, and maybe I'll let you in, God would say. Not here in Christianity. God says, I know people can be messy. We can be selfish. We can twist things and bend things. God came into the mess, whether we're barn, whether animals and cows and pigs. God came into the mess and made room for people to be messy. He came down to our level to create space for us. He wanted to make a productive farm, do life with us, grow things with us, produce things in us and through us. So let's just think how that looks like in the real, how you think about that. When you come to circumstances, I bet you many of us have a reel that plays all the time. It must be perfect. It must be perfect. Yet don't you really know that no human being can be perfect? What if you just change that to it needs to be excellent, which is doing the best with what you have, not perfect? Wouldn't that be a little less frustrating? Your kids suddenly misbehave, and you're not only reacting to the misbehavior, you're reacting to how it makes you look as a parent. You're making me look bad. Haven't you said that? Maybe your parents said, you should be ashamed of yourself. Really, because you're embarrassing me. I can't relax until it's perfect. You may not realize unconsciously how many times I was too hard on my kids because their failures made me feel like a failure, and so I was reacting poorly because I was defining myself by how they behaved. Or maybe I too quickly think that imperfection is laziness, and it might just be somebody's exhausted. What if I got rid of those gesture reels and replaced them with just this simple idea? Real people require space to be imperfect. Does your marriage have space for a messy farm? What if you remind yourself that failure is what leads to success? We shouldn't be fearful of failure. Failure often means you're trying new things. What if instead of defining yourself by how your kids react or your business, you're able to say, I'm not my performance, so therefore I can take critique on what I said and how I did it. I appreciate my performance. I put a lot of myself into that performance, but I'm not defined by it. What if you say being real is more important than being perfect? I said that my son, when he went off to college, I said, listen, I've told you I don't think it's a good idea to smoke marijuana. I don't think it's very good to do this and this and this. A lot of things I've given you, and you got to decide what you're going to do. But I'd rather have a real relationship than a fake one. So if you decide to do things I didn't tell you was a good idea to do, I'd rather you just tell me you're doing them than trying to pretend. I don't want to kind of play this drama where you pretend to be something you're not. I really want to have a real relationship, not just a fake one. I had a friend of mine who was coming to Horizon and started getting into Bible studies and studying the Bible, and he's a real perfectionist, and his work showed it. And he didn't want to lose that excellence, and I didn't want to lose that excellence. But he realized if he could just tweak his thinking, when he realized that trying to be perfect, his words, not mine, it was like he's trying to save himself. Every time he did a project that was perfect, he somehow, for that moment, for that second, felt like he meant something, he did something. And yet it drove his wife crazy, drove him crazy, his perfectionism. When he realized the main message of the Bible is that God, only God is perfect, and he came because we're imperfect, but that we can see ourselves through his perfection when he forgives us. He said, I began to realize I didn't need to be my own savior anymore. How I did this project didn't have to be perfect because I couldn't achieve it anyway. I was perfect because of what God did. Which I know is kind of a deep thought. I'll get more into it in the next couple weeks. But that thought allowed him to say, I can do my best, but I don't have to be perfect. And it just helped him to relax more. I had another friend who said something similar. He said, my family growing up, the most important thing, he described it like a placid lake. You have to pretend everything looks good all the time. So we didn't really talk about anything real. When I became a Christian, I realized I could be imperfect. I could talk about habits and secrets and bad things I had done. And I realized that it was okay to not always have the placid, perfect surface. I could be real. And God would love me and accept me and work with me when I was real. That messy farm, he said, just changed my ability to relate to my kids and my marriage and even myself. So how about for you? What does it look like for you to swap just one reel this week? Just one reel. Is it the build-up reel, switching from the tear-down? I'm letting this thing tear me down. I need to build me up. Is it really thinking about your words and noticing a pattern like what my parents told me growing up and what my wife told me and what my kids have told me and what my last review told me, maybe I need to open my eyes a little bit to this, how I use my mouth. Is it a perfectionistic attitude that is motivated by a good thing, but you're not allowing for messy barns in your life and therefore not allowing for real relationships in your life? Because real relationships are messy. Let me just show you real quickly how each of those would play out so you can think about this week. Just pick one of those, but here's the first one. Action, stressful situation happens at work or at home this week. You think to yourself, How can I use this moment that happened right here to build me or build the other person up? They sound stressed. Sounds like a difficult thing we're going to hit as a company. How can I use this moment to build up the team? Therefore, I'm feeling a sense of resilience because of that. This isn't purposeless or meaningless pain. It's purposeful, what we're going to go through. And I've got empathy. I'm thinking about just the very nature of how do I build others up. I'm thinking about not just myself, but other people. Therefore, what am I going to do? I'm going to react. How do we build muscle through this? How do we ask for help and come together like an NFL team up against our opponents? How do we encourage one another as we're up against this challenge? That's what it might look like for you to switch reels this week. Second reel, how do you use your words? Let's just say you get criticized this week, right? We all do. But what if you say to yourself, how do I, when being criticized, use my words like a hedge to protect my marriage and myself rather than a whip? I'm still annoyed that I got criticized, right? I'm still annoyed, but I'm going to be thoughtful. All right, how can I handle this differently? How can I let my words not be like their words? It's going to bring a calm resolve, just a little bit, to the situation. I might ask questions before I react. I might think about their needs. Man, are they having a tough day before I respond? I might be open to feedback a little bit more. Or lastly, how about that last reel, maybe that's one for you, is the messy barn one. An unexpected detour or ordeal hits in some project you got going on. But you think to yourself, you know what? When you do stuff that's significant, it comes with a mess. When you want a productive farm, it's going to come with a messy barn. That's okay. It's okay to have a mess. It's okay for things to not be according to plan and go off. I'm going to have kind of a relieved realism in how I feel about it. A peaceful acceptance that bad stuff happens to everybody. The world's not out to get me. The universe is not out to get me. That's just kind of how life works when you do stuff. So how am I going to react? Let's make a plan. Let's figure out how we can come together in our marriage and family to navigate this wisely. And how do I make a stand here? Even in the midst of this thing I didn't expect, with grace and courage. I'm going to invite the band to come out and do this last song. It's probably a song you've heard on the radio many times. And I love this song because it really is a reel that's worth singing. And maybe if the reel metaphor doesn't work with you, it's a song you can sing in the back of your mind, which is when you face adversity, when you face challenge, when things don't go your way or people don't react the way you want, what if you said to yourself, you know what, despite what the challenge, I'm not going to let this crush me. I'm not going to let this defeat me. I'm not going to let this make me bitter or angry. I'm going to stand because of this. I'm going to be stronger because of this. I'm going to be better, not bitter, because of this. What if just this song became your reel? I'm standing, even when I'm under assault.